to WEFT for all those public affairs programs and lots of great music. And now here is today's episode of Disability Beat. This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with Meg Cooch, executive director of the Arc of Illinois. But first, disability news for the week of August 12, 2019. A proposed revision to the diagnostic criteria for intellectual disability is prompting concerns about underdiagnosis and a loss of services and legal protections. The American Psychiatric Association, or APA, is considering altering the entry for intellectual disability in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, or DSM-5. Often called the Bible of psychiatry, many professionals rely on the manual to determine what symptoms are worthy of a diagnosis. The issue is a connection between two of the three criteria for diagnosing intellectual disability. The three criteria are deficits in intellect, deficits in daily life skills referred to as adaptive functioning, and onset during childhood. One sentence which was included when the DSM-5 was released in 2013 appears to require that adaptive function deficits be caused by intellectual deficits, said Margaret Nygren, executive director and CEO of the American Association on Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities, or AAIDD. It reads in part, quote, "The deficits in adaptive functioning must be directly related to the intellectual impairments," end quote. In 2018, AAIDD requested that the sentence be struck. Instead, APA has proposed replacing it with language that says in part, quote, "Deficits in adaptive functioning are a consequence of intellectual deficits," end quote. The organization is accepting comments on the proposed intellectual disability revision until August 14th, so just a couple days from now. A date has not been determined for when a revision of the section could be released. Nygren said experts have agreed that intellect and adaptive behavior are separate concepts, and it's impossible to distinguish which aspects of adaptive behavior are the result of IQ, educational opportunities, or mental health issues. Nygren said the current DSM-5 language has already been used in a legal case where the state of Texas sought to execute a man with intellectual disability. The state argued that his adaptive functions were likely caused by a lack of learning opportunities rather than being directly related to his intellectual function, and so therefore he did not have an intellectual disability. In February, the U.S. Supreme Court in Moore v. Texas ruled against the state, finding that he does have an intellectual disability, and set aside that lower court decision allowing his execution. A facility in Virginia that serves people with developmental disabilities was spray-painted with an array of racial and gender slurs last week. Staff members at the Woodmont Community Integration Center discovered the graffiti all over the building in a vehicle early Tuesday morning. Police were called and are still investigating the incident, an ACPD spokeswoman said. According to an anonymous source, quote, "When staff arrived for work on Tuesday morning, they found an array of derogatory words written across the outside walls and windows of the building. Similar words were also written adjacent to the main entrance of the YMCA on the upper level and on several disabled parking signs and a van," end quote. The graffiti has since been removed by county crews, but the center closed early on Tuesday due to the nature of the words, which were described by a county official as derogatory and hateful. When a federal judge in 2017 ended 40 years of court supervision of the care for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities in the District of Columbia, it was hailed as historic. Mayor Muriel Bowser could feel rightly satisfaction in an accomplishment that had eluded seven previous administrations. But now, 2 years later, that achievement may be at risk with what advocates say is an ill-conceived plan to discontinue a program that has been a critical pillar of the service system for this population. At issue is the decision by the Department on Disability Services not to renew a contract with Georgetown University to provide healthcare services to people with intellectual and developmental disabilities who are in the care of that agency. Administration officials have said the contract is no longer needed because the DDS is now able to assume those responsibilities, and they stress that the services will continue. Questions have been raised by advocates, lawyers, and former state disability department heads in what has been unprecedented backlash. The fact that Georgetown, through its nationally regarded health initiative program, provided outside expertise for caring for people with complicated health issues was a factor in U.S. District Court Judge Ellen Siegel Huvel's decision to end court supervision of the department. The way in which the decision was made, apparently with no input from disability service providers and a transition plan seemingly patched together after critical coverage by the Washington Post, is concerning for advocates. It also appears that what they are planning in the way of a substitute could end up costing just as much and, if critics are right, provide less. The $1.3 million contract with Georgetown employs a physician, two nurses, two psychologists, two home visitors, a public health analyst, and a health educator, some of whom are available around the clock. Wayne Turnage, D.C.'s Deputy Mayor for Health and Human Services, said he rigorously reviewed the decision and the agency's plans and is confident there will be a continuation of high-quality services. He also said there will be careful monitoring to ensure there will be no problems. And finally, people with intellectual or developmental disabilities are seven times as likely to be victims of sexual assault, according to a study by National Public Radio and the Justice Department. But there isn't a lot of research about what happens after a person reports a sexual assault. That's starting to change. Erica McFadden is the executive director of the Arizona Developmental Disabilities Planning Council. Her organization recently awarded a grant to a group of researchers to find out if existing policies work when it comes to reporting and preventing sexual assault. According to McFadden, quote, "But yet we as the public and as people with disabilities don't really know if it's addressing the issues that we're facing. We don't have the stories to see if that's really happening on the ground. So hopefully it will reconcile what's being stated, what's happening versus what's really happening," end quote. McFadden said the final report should be available sometime next summer. So if you or someone you know who has a developmental disability reported an incident of abuse, exploitation, or neglect, the Arizona Developmental Disabilities Planning Council wants to hear from you about your experience. You can contact Erica McFadden at 602-542-8977 or email her at addpc@azdes.gov. Stories can ensure current gaps are addressed and strengths in the system of reporting and prevention are recognized. And that's the news for this week.
I'm praying that you'll let me out of the dark. Oh, please don't hurt me. Fears keep burning through my mind, 'cause love is such a crazy ride. It takes a lot to show my personal side. Oh, please don't hurt me. Be who you say you are.
And you are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I'm Vicki Nicewander, and I'm joined today on the phone by my friend Meg Cooch, who is the executive director of the Arc of Illinois, and I must say, the strongest system of advocacy that we have here in the state of Illinois. So welcome to the program, Meg.
Thanks so much for the invitation.
So we have a lot to talk about. The ARC is always doing lots of stuff, and I looked at the list that you sent me of things that you wanted to cover, and I'm thinking about what about this and what about this and what about this? There's so much. So this may be a series of interviews over a period of time. I think there's a lot that the ARC has to offer. So why don't you start out by just introducing yourself, and for those who don't know about the ARC of Illinois, give them some information about how to get connected.
Sure. First, my name is Meg Cooch. I'm the executive director of the ARC. The ARC's been around since the 1950s. We're a coalition of people with disabilities, families, and community organizations that were really created to fight for Illinois to be a place where all people with intellectual and developmental disabilities can live, work, play, love in communities across the state with everyone else. And so we continue to do that in a number of ways. The organization advocates very strongly in Springfield and at the federal level to ensure that there is a voice and an opportunity for people to speak up and families to speak up. We also provide information and resources. We provide family support and support for an individual's advocacy efforts for themselves to get what they need. We provide a ton of training, which is one of the things we're going to talk about today, and educational opportunities for people with disabilities, for families, and for professionals and other allies. And we also provide a little assistive technology fund to help support people trying to get access to assistive technology, in particularly iPads and other handheld devices. And we provide, thanks to the Illinois Council on Developmental Disabilities, a stipend program to allow individuals and families opportunities to travel around the state and beyond to attend conferences and educate and make connections with other people through conferences and training.
And each one of those programs could be a half an hour show. Right there.
And if it's okay with you, I'll give the phone number and the website just so that I agree that there's lots to talk about with the ARC, and we're only going to touch a little bit on it. So if you have any questions about the ARC and think that there might be a way we could help you, please call 815-464-1832, or you can go onto the web, and our web address is thearcofil.org. I'll spell that. It's thearcofil.org. So check out all of our programs, as well as you can register for a lot of our events on the website.
Yeah, and we'll give that information at the end of the interview today too, so that people who didn't have pens in their hand can get them and be ready to take down the information. How's that?
Sounds good.
So let's start at the top of your list, and there's a thing coming up is it in August?
Yes.
Yeah, it's coming up just in a few days, right?
Correct.
What's going on?
Well, it's very exciting. Thanks to the Council on Developmental Disabilities funding a collaboration really with the ARC, Sibling Leadership Network, the Illinois Self-Advocacy Alliance, and the Illinois Assistive Technology Program. Over the last 2 years, we've done a number of trainings and tried to advocate to improve how Illinois supports people with disabilities trying to get jobs. So one of the things we're doing right now is a series of trainings around the state. The last two are happening August 15th in Peoria at United Presbyterian Church and August 20th in Carbondale at the Southern Illinois Center for Independent Living. And these trainings are really targeted for people with disabilities and families, so we welcome professionals and others that are interested. And it's there's a number of things we're going to be touching on. We're going to be touching on how to perform and be a self-advocate, not generally, but also specifically around employment. So being able to have people think about what they want around jobs and be able to tell that to family and friends, providers, and other allies then can help support people in their effort to get jobs. It usually takes a village. Generally gut connection and networks. That's how a lot of people find jobs. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We also have the Division of Developmental Disabilities and the Division of Rehab Services, who are going to be present and providing information about how people can access their services to help gain employment through DRS, the Division of Rehab Services, and then DDD, the Division of Developmental Disabilities. So they're going to do this step-by-step process of what they do and how you access them and how you can use their services. And then we'll end around talking about supported employment success stories and around systems advocacy. So, you know, we appreciate that there are some things in place to help people, try to support people to get jobs, but we all know that there are a lot of people still looking for jobs, and so we need to make sure Illinois does a better job of helping to support people with disabilities and prioritize employment for people with disabilities. So there's some opportunity to advocate going forward. So it's not just about individuals getting jobs, but everyone getting jobs.
And I know you have one on the 15th in Peoria, one on the 20th in Carbondale. Are those identical sessions, or would it be an expectation that people would attend more than one?
No, it's an identical session. So it's a standalone 10 to 1:30. We provide lunch, and there are consumer and family stipends available for travel if for some reason people are coming from a little farther away. Mm-hmm. For folks that are not in those two areas or missed, we also did one in Rockford and one in Quincy. We're going to do a webinar as well on September 6th.
I was going to ask about that. You're big on the webinars, and that's a great, great resource for people who can't travel.
Exactly. And I think the hope would be to record it. So for some reason, if you can't make September 6th, we're going to record it and put it on the web, because I think our sense is that it's been very confusing for people to try to access government services to help support gaining employment. And so we want to make sure it's in a place where people can listen to it multiple times. And we'll also we've created some material and are in the process of creating some more flow chart and things to just try to make it easier, because it can be really complex to try to access these services. So September 6th at 11 a.m., the registration isn't up, so give me a day or two, but it's hot off the press. We booked it today. So I will have further information, which I can share with Vicki for the future, but that we expect to find that on our website as well.
So people are able to attend in person. That information, the date, time, place, and all that is on the Arc of Illinois website as well.
Correct. If you look at the arcofil.org/events, you can register for free, but you can register for the August 15th and August 20th events, as well as the other events that we're going to talk about in a second.
Okay. All right. Well, that is a great start. And we got so much to go through yet. So the next thing on your list is advocacy, or the Alliance/ARC advocacy trainings. This sounds really interesting.
So what we decided, we were partnering, this is the second time we've done this, partner with the Self-Advocacy Alliance, which is a group that does a ton of training and education and advocacy work with people with intellectual and developmental disabilities around the state. We've partnered with them, and we did a... this past March, we did 5 trainings around both self-advocacy and what that means, and making sure we practice our self-advocacy muscles, because those sometimes can atrophy and if we don't really keep practicing them. So talking about self-advocacy, and then we are also talking about legislative advocacy. So why it's important to get to know your legislator in your area, and frankly, what is a legislator? What is a policymaker? And then finally, how a bill becomes a law. You know, we saw this last session and sessions before this, but especially this last session, there were a number of bills that can really help or potentially impact people with intellectual and developmental disabilities and families. And if we aren't talking to legislators and policymakers about what might impact us, what we need them to support us around and fund, but also what might hurt people or limit their ability to be in the community, they won't necessarily know. And so we're really trying to encourage people to think about this. So it's supposed to be a kind of a 101 the material and the training is targeted for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, families, and kind of allies. So the hope is that people can come and it's accessible. And the idea is really for people to practice and to, you know, think about what they're passionate about and what they would want to make sure to tell legislators if they had an opportunity to talk to them.
And all of these are being held in August as well, or just starting at the end?
It starts at the end of August in Springfield, so in the center part of the state, and then it goes through. We have, you can find them on our website on the events section, but we're going to Springfield, Quincy, Rockford, Chicago, Effingham, and Centralia. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to, this is kind of an effort with the ARC and with the Alliance to really try to push out maybe small and medium-sized trainings around the state for people that really can't travel as much to some of our larger events, which tend to be more on the northern above I-80.
And are these full-day events or only part of a day?
That's a great question. So these trainings that speak up and speak out for you, yourself, your friends, and your community, and they're from 10 to 2 p.m. Again, lunch is provided, and they are free.
Okay. All right. Then you have a conference coming up, a healthcare conference coming up on September 12th. Talk to us about that.
Yeah. So this is really exciting. So this is one of our kind of larger conferences, the first two, the supported employment and the advocacy trainings are probably more like 10 to 70 people. These, the two that I'm going to talk about in a second, are a little bit larger events. So the first one is our annual healthcare conference, which is sponsored by one of our programs, the Family to Family Health Information Center. And it's in Alsip, so right south of Chicago in the southern suburbs. And it's really a day-long focused on accessing healthcare and benefits for people with disabilities kind of throughout the lifespan. And really not just intellectual and developmental disabilities, but people with maybe significant medical needs. So it's a little bit broader than some of our other other programs. And it really ranges from, we're going to have Sherry Schneider come and talk about accessing benefits, SSI, SSDI, Medicare, and Medicaid, which if anyone hasn't seen her, she's incredibly dynamic, and it's an exciting, she makes it much more accessible than I think anything I've seen before in terms of training like this.
She can take that alphabet soup and turn it into fun. She really does. It's an amazing thing.
It is. And it's, you know, every time I see her trainings, I tend to learn something new. So it's not only accessible, but at the same time, you kind of keep learning new things. And she tends to get things hot off the press as they change. So she's really terrific. We're also going to be hearing a panel of family advocates and leaders to talk about their experience as moms and as family members, about how they're advocating to ensure that their children and loved ones are getting the services they need as they have to navigate that system. We're going to hear from Bob Farley, who's an attorney at law, who really helped to support the class action lawsuit NB, which is in the process of being settled with the state. And the point of NB is really to encourage access to more mental health and behavioral support needs for children with special needs. So it's a really great opportunity as we think forward about the other services and supports that could make people and kids have more access to the health care and the mental health behavioral support that they need. So he's going to talk, and he also is incredibly dynamic. And then there's a new thing this year. We're having a choice of two different sessions, one looking at the University of Illinois at Chicago's Division of Specialized Care for Children and hearing from the executive director there. And then the other talking about brainstorming ideas to improve healthcare experiences for people with IDD. And so that's kind of a little bit of a breakout. We don't always, haven't always done that in the past.
I was going to say, I thought this was like everybody all in one room all day so you could have that conversation.
We're shaking it up for you, Vicki.
Oh,
Vicki.
Boy.
We're shaking it up for you. But I think the idea was that, you know, sometimes there is a mix of folks in the room, which makes a really great question and answer and some great dynamics. But then sometimes it's nice for the folks that are focused on children to be in a room, and then some folks are focused more on the adult side of healthcare, and there's an opportunity now for both of them to kind of go and do a little bit more of a deep dive. And then we'll come back together at the end to talk a little bit about private insurance, so navigating options through private insurance. And then finally, we'll close with a fairly recently retired gentleman from Healthcare and Family Services who's going to talk about an Illinois Medicaid update, because there have been some pretty significant changes over time with Medicaid. So he's going to kind of close us out with that.
Okay. And then the last thing on your list, and if we have time, I have more questions for you, but the last thing on your list is the Living with Autism Conference, which doesn't happen till October, which isn't that far off, actually. I think the registration is already available for that, right?
It is. And actually, I didn't mention the healthcare conference is September 12th in Alsip. The Living with Autism Conference is October 3rd. And so you can already register if you want. There are stipends available for people who, need support to get there. This is a kind of very unique conference. It is another similar one-day conference, and it is in all in one room generally. But this one tends to be a balance of real personal experiences. So this year we have a father and son team that are going to come, and the father, Derek Volk, is going to talk about his experience raising a son on the autism spectrum, and then Dylan Volk, who's an adult, is going to talk about his experience being a man with autism and some of the lessons he's learned over time. And then we also have some professionals that come and talk about their experiences. This year we have someone talking about language and communication skills, mm-hmm. and how critical that is. And they tend to be really useful in taking away kind of concrete skills that you can kind of apply on a day-to-day basis. So it's really nice because they tend to be in the world and be currently practicing practitioners and can kind of offer some really concrete and useful advice and suggestions. Kathy Morris is going to talk about strategies around behavioral support needs for children and adolescents, and how families and educators and others, professionals, can help to support children who maybe struggle with higher behavioral support needs. And then finally, we're really excited. One of our presenting sponsors, HOPE and the Autism Program, during lunch is going to bring a number of the programs that they fund through the Autism Program together to talk about the unique services and programs that they provide around the state. So hopefully that'll give an opportunity for people that aren't aware of the Autism Program to be able to plug in to some of their local organizations if they come from farther away outside Chicago.
Now, this is a pretty big conference, too. How many people typically attend?
That's a great question. I think last year there were about 150 people, mm-hmm. But it sort of ranges between 100 and 200 people depending on the year. In the situation, but it's about between 125 and 150.
I'm actually kind of surprised it's that small. Yeah, I mean the interest in autism, and especially the current research and strategies and all that, should be of great interest to a lot of folks that are out there.
It is a growing conference, I would say, and this last year I think was the most people we've had. So it's grown pretty significantly over time.
Okay, very good. Well, we are out of time. I know you're doing the Speak Up and Speak Out Conference Summit in October as well, and I think we'll probably have you back or someone from the Arc of Illinois to talk about that in great detail, because it's a great event, and look forward to that and so much of what the Arc does every year. So thank you so much for joining me today, Meg. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Vicki, for the invitation. Really appreciate it.
No problem. Meg Cooch, Executive Director of the Arc of Illinois, and that website again is?
TheArcOfIL.org, TheArcOfIL.org.
Great. Thanks, Meg.
Thank you.
This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email me at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in, and have a great rest of your week. No, I'm staying.